Today is also World Refugee Day. Secretary of State Colin Powell used the occasion to highlight the plight of hundreds of thousands of people forced from their homes in Darfur, a region of western Sudan. The U.S. once praised Sudan's government for signing peace agreements to end a separate conflict in southern Sudan. Now the U.S. and United Nations both blame that same Sudanese government for delaying vital aid for those in need. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports.
After promising Sudan a peace dividend for reaching a deal with rebels in the south, U.S. officials, including Charles Snyder of the State Department, find themselves in a major dilemma when it comes to dealing with the Khartoum government.
We've made it clear to them that normalization doesn't come with Darfur in flames.
The acting Assistant Secretary of State for Africa described for members of Congress this week conversations he's had with Sudanese officials about Darfur and about the government-backed militias known as the Janjaweed.
I find myself in the ludicrous position, in one hand talking about lifting sanctions, and the other having to talk about trying to increase sanctions on you and the Janjaweed in particular if you don't take action immediately. And I made the point that I'm not talking a month, I'm talking in weeks. This is too serious, and so far we're seeing too many bureaucratic obstacles.
Sudan already faces U.S. sanctions, so the new threat, Snyder says, would only have a psychological impact. Roger Winter of the U.S. Agency for International Development described some of the bureaucratic obstacles, saying Sudanese customs officials have held up international aid. He warned that the delays can be deadly for the people crammed into refugee camps after losing their homes, livestock, and land.
The combination of the overcrowding, the weakness of their bodies, the diseases that are out there, the lack of sanitation and latrines and all of that kind of stuff, this is what kills them. So it isn't as easy as getting some food there. There's a whole complex approach that needs to be taken to save the lives of the people. And the obstructions that the government has put in the way of these programs guarantees that the body count rises.
U.S. officials are discussing whether or not to call the conflict in Darfur genocide, a term that requires an international response. Up to now, they've accused the Janjaweed militias of an ethnic cleansing campaign, which journalist Julie Flint documented in a Human Rights Watch report.
Mile after mile of burnt and abandoned villages, irrefutable evidence of a scorched earth policy the government says doesn't exist. Hundreds of thousands of Masalit farmers lived in this area little more than 6 months ago. Today there is quite literally no one.
Flint spent nearly a month in a small part of Darfur populated by Masalit tribespeople, where she said many women were raped in front of their husbands and children, and villages attacked systematically.
Attacks like these are no longer attacks by Arab nomads driven onto Masalit farming lands in search of water and grazing. They often involve hundreds of men. They're carried out under the eyes of government soldiers by men who wear the same uniform as the regular army and who often enjoy the support of the Sudanese Air Force. This is not happenstance. It is not coincidence. It is coordination.
And similar, she says, to the tactics Sudan used to counter a rebel movement in the south of the country, a conflict that lasted 2 decades before painstaking negotiations on a peace settlement. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Washington.